Not just anybody. Help. You know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find a change of mind, I'll open up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being round. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me?
Hi, everybody. I'm Beattie Cohan Reddos, and that is exactly why I am here every Monday afternoon from 3 to 4 on the Ask Beattie Show right here on the Progressive Radio Network. You know, what's really interesting, I've been getting emails from people, and they are not exactly sure. They did not know that I was a psychotherapist and also a sex therapist. I'm also the author of the groundbreaking book about relationships, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this is a book that we all need to read. I wish I had had this book 25 or 30 years ago when I began my own dating life. This is the definitive word on how to assess who's right for you and who is wrong for you before you commit, so that you will not be lamenting, oh my goodness, and how to never make a mistake in love again. And yes, as you probably also know, I mean, I've been doing the Ask Beattie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. In fact, today, and I can hardly believe it, is show number 205. And of course, I'm an expert guest on national radio and television. And I also have a private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. And people also wonder, well, what are the kinds of people? Who are the kinds of people that I treat? Well, I treat people like you and me. And just as the Beatles' lyrics tell us, we all go through, every one of us, including myself, including yourself, friends and family, we all go through a lot of ups and downs in our lives. And the very, very best thing that we can do when we find that the depression is not going away, you are eating well, you are taking vitamins, you are exercising, and yet your mood continues to remain very, very low. You are either eating too much, or you're not eating enough, or you're sleeping too much, or you're not sleeping enough. You have very, very low energy, poor concentration. And this weekend, a couple of my patients were really very, very suicidal. And just like professional athletes, and I don't know how many of you were watching the Olympics over the last several days, we all need help. We all need coaches to help us stay on track. And as I try to convey to you every single week here on the Ask Beattie Show, life is challenging. It is challenging for everybody, and we do not need to take this journey on our own. And what about some of you who are waking up every day and you're really, really feeling anxious, and some of you may be having headaches and nausea and experiencing panic attacks? And again, you're trying your best, and yet the anxiety is simply not going away on its own. And hopefully you're not going to go to a doctor who is merely going to prescribe another pill, but that you're going to be able to work with someone who will help you get to the root of the problem. And of course, at times, some people do need some medication, but I think that we are far, far too fast in our American society to be prescribing one medication after another. I know a current patient of mine And I have been encouraging her for the last several years to change psychiatrists. She actually takes about 15 different medications every single day, including 3 sleeping medications. And today, as it happened after our session, she took a very, very bad fall. And frankly, I'm not surprised because she walks around a good amount of the time feeling like a zombie. And yet what was so interesting is that she is not open and she is not willing to seek another opinion with another psychiatrist. And clearly, this is an example of a woman who is clearly taking too many pills. Or what about the fact that, you know, you're drinking, you're just drinking too much. You know, you've said to yourself and you're actually fooling yourself, particularly if you are an alcoholic, I can have one, I can have two. And yet you're finding that one or two is becoming 3 and 4 and 5, and it is out of control, and you are out of control, and it is playing havoc with your life and your relationship. At what point are you willing and are you serious about acknowledging and addressing and resolving your issues? You know, I was listening to Gary Nell's show today at noon with my husband, Jim. And, you know, Gary said something, you know, very, very poignant. I mean, you can only offer help to people, but in the final analysis, they need to make a decision whether or not they really want to sink or whether or not they swim. And we can only encourage people to do whatever it is that they need to do, whether or not it's eating properly and exercising and taking vitamins and making sure that there is as little toxicity in their lives as possible. And I'm not just talking about environmental toxicity and chemicals. I'm also talking about people toxicity and chemicals as well. And this is another question that I want you all to ponder. In your current life, in your current family life and social network life and business life, are the majority of your people loving and supporting and caring and compassionate people? Or are you finding, if you take an honest look, that there are a lot of really toxic people in your life who are making you sick, not only physically, but emotionally and psychologically as well? And particularly, these people happen to be family members. It is a really, really difficult decision to make. You try and you hope that there can be some kind of conciliation with somebody in your life who you may very much love, but who is in fact poisonous. But when you get to a point when you see that regardless of what it is that you do or you don't do, that the relationship remains toxic, what are your options? And certainly in my own life, I want zero toxicity. And this is something that I really do want you all to consider, because having dysfunctional, toxic relationships in our lives make us physically sick, make us emotionally sick, and clearly interfere with the quality of our lives and our relationships. And also, talking about relationships, we have to be honest. We have to be really, really honest with ourselves and whether or not our so-called intimate relationships and partnerships, are they working? Are they working most of the time? And as I tell my patients every day, there is no such thing as the perfect relationship. But if you're finding that most of the times are really pretty unhappy and that you're very, very disappointed with the communication, with the problem solving, with the sex or the lack of sex, the question then becomes, again, what are you prepared to do about it? I would say that the vast majority of people who call me, whether or not they're people who are suffering from depression or anxiety or substance abuse of various different kinds or relationship or sexual issues, they all pretty much invariably say that we wish we had called you earlier, whether it was a year or 5 years or 10 years. I want to tell you a little bit about a couple who came in to see me last weekend. It was actually for the whole weekend, from California. They'd been married 10 years and they had not had sex in about 9.5 of the 10 years. And he was having some issues with erectile dysfunction. But this was something, and these were highly educated, really lovely, really attractive people. And this was not a subject at all that they were able or willing to tackle. So what happened? Well, she had an affair. And she called me, and this was, she called me actually through the Ask BD website. And we had a few sessions online, and that is not my favorite way of doing therapy by a long shot. And she invariably told her husband, and they decided that they were going to New York City to work with me. So they had a lot of things to talk about, including the affair that she had. But her husband was really amazing. He was very, very understanding. And he said he could understand that since they had not been able to discuss their sexual issues, specifically his erectile dysfunction, he understood. And they loved each other and were committed to moving on. And what happened during the weekend was really, really interesting. I gave them homework. They had exercises. So they went back to their hotel. And for the very, very first time in 9.5 years, and this is a true story, he was able to get an erection, maintain an erection, sustain an erection, and they were able to then have intercourse for the very first time in 9.5 years. And I'm hoping they went back to California after 2.5 days. And I might add that we spent 6 consecutive hours over the weekend talking and analyzing and trying to get them to get on a much more solid path in terms of their relationship and in terms of their sex life. So if that happened, I mean, this was really for them, this was a miracle, because had they not come to New York City to work with me, and had there not been some glimmer of hope that they were going to be able to work out their problems and have a satisfying sex life, I mean, she was determined that she was going to leave the marriage and get a divorce. So I'm saying, gee, in 12 hours, look what happened. So in looking at your own life, if things are not going well, and you've been sitting on your issues for days and weeks and months, and for some people, actually for many, many people, for years, today is the day. I mean, you can call me here live on the Ask BD Show at 888-874-4888. You can email me. You can listen to the Ask BD archives here on the Progressive Radio Network and get a sense of how I think about therapy, how I view a variety of different emotional, psychological, and psychiatric issues. And there's no use beating yourself up and saying, well, I should have called, I should have done something about the issue a week, a year, 10 years, 25 years ago. Today is a new day, and you have the power. You have the personal responsibility as well to make a decision today, to make a decision right now that you are ready to finally acknowledge and address and resolve your issues. And I want to tell you something that people working with me, and this is not a PR marketing plug for myself and for my practice, but if people are serious and if they're willing to work very, very hard, about 80% of the people do very, very well, regardless of the issues that they present to me when they begin therapy. So moving along, I hope I have sufficiently motivated you to actually do something about your issues today. Today I have a guest who is a friend, who is a colleague. Her name is Cheryl Benton, and she is the founder and publisher of the very popular website, The Three Tomatoes. And this is a website, and I write for The Three Tomatoes, I might add, for women who aren't kids. And inspired by her own experiences and those of her successful, accomplished New York friends, this grown-up novel, Can You See Us Now?, will resonate with any woman over the age of 50 who has ever felt invisible and marginalized in our youth-obsessed culture. And having lived and worked for many, many years in New York City, Cheryl Benton was truly starting to feel invisible. Cheryl, welcome to the Ask Beattie Show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I am terrific. You know, it's really interesting to hear you say this, to write what you were writing about, how you too, I mean, here you are, an attractive, lovely, smart, successful woman, that you were starting to feel invisible. So what was that all about, Cheryl?
Yeah, well, you know, it's this phenomenon that I think happens to many of us, if not most of us, as we start to get somewhere around the age of 50. And I think it's twofold. I think our perceptions of ourselves start to change a little bit, but the world, the way the world is viewing us, starts to change. And I know for me personally, because my career was in advertising, which is, you know, certainly a very young, vibrant business, and I remember looking around the conference room one day and realizing I was the oldest person in the conference room.
But let me ask you this. Did it bother you that you were the oldest and probably the smartest person in the conference room? Why did it become an issue for you?
It becomes an issue when suddenly you're realizing that, yes, I have more experience than anyone around this table, but yet now my thoughts and opinions are actually starting to be discounted.
And that's what you saw happening with yourself.
And I not only saw it happening with me, then I realized it was happening with my friends as I was looking around, who were all very smart, accomplished women, you know, who I knew in New York City. And, you know, and in one way or another, that was starting to happen. So it was things like, you know, I actually opened up the book with these three best friends who are being ignored by the bartender. That actually happened to us one day. And we're like, holy moly, what just happened here?
But just a minute, I thought that we talk about all the time that 50, you know, is the new 30 or 40. And you're saying that you were out with friends and people and bartenders specifically were really starting to ignore you, and that you began to feel invisible.
Yeah, and it's not, and then it's marketers. You know, you get out of that prize 25 to 45 demographic, and you realize they are not talking to you anymore, and that, you know, you manifest itself in many different ways. I mean, certainly trying to shop in New York City is often no easy feat unless you're a 20-something, you know, millennial, because that's who the clothes are being marketed to. You know, it's a whole host of things. And I think we're starting to see some changes now, you know, some more positive things. And I think we are starting to see successful women being portrayed not just as grandmothers or kind of background people. You know, for example, I love the show Grace and Frankie, which I think has just done a wonderful job of really, you know, projecting what people in this age range actually look like and feel like and do. And it's not the way, I don't think they've ever been betrayed before.
You know, what's interesting, I was discussing, you know, having you on the Ask Beattie Show today as a guest with my husband, Jim, who, you know, is a sociologist.
Right.
And I asked him, I said, Jim, if you could ask Cheryl Benton any questions at all, you know, where would you want to take this conversation coming from an activist, you know, sociological perspective? And what he said was, he says, you know, it's interesting, this age group, this ageism kind of joins the ranks of blacks and gays and inmates and the poor and homeless, who have also and certainly do feel invisible by society in so many different ways. I mean, Ralph Ellison's book, you know, the Invisible Man. So that the question then becomes, so what are we going to do about this? I mean, here we have the social movements, Me Too, Time's Up, Black Lives Matters. I mean, what are your thoughts on what we as women over 50, even though we may look 30 or feel 30, what are we going to do about this so that we can empower ourselves and not feel victimized?
It's such a great question, honestly, and it's one that I've given a lot of thought to, especially recently, and certainly I thought about when I was writing this book, well, you know, which is a novel, and it's also fun, and at the core of it is the power of our friendships with women. So, you know, and the ageism thing, you know, comes all throughout it. But I think you're right. It's sort of the last of the isms that's still socially acceptable, number one.
Right.
And I think a lot of it is because we've bought into it. I think a lot of it comes from within, because that's why there are all the anti-aging products. That's
yes.
Why, you know, it's instead of embracing age, we fear growing older. And I think that's a fact for so many of us. So what do? We deny it. Or we don't want to be perceived by people as a certain age. I know, for example, I honestly don't like to tell my age. The reason I don't like to tell my age is because of how people then respond to you. And they'll say, oh, well, you don't look that age. It's like, well, this is the age I am. So maybe some of it is just everyone stepping up and saying, yes, I am this age, and this is what this age looks like. But I think a lot of it is how we start to embrace aging as something that it's actually something to celebrate.
So this is
and
something then
fearing.
I think so. Then this is something, if this is, you know, psychological in part, I mean, there's obviously, you know, a reality to all of this, then these are things that we women over 50 need to work through within ourselves. I mean, I can think of, in fact, I was telling Jim about this morning, there were two patients that I had in Sarasota, two women who were 85 years of age. One of the women, I had initially been treating her for severe depression. Her husband had died after a 60-year marriage. And she started having sexual relationships with much, much younger men. She died at 90, Cheryl, with a smile on her face. She used to get dressed up every day. She wasn't all that mobile, so I used to come to her assisted living facility in Sarasota. She was dolled up. She felt terrific. And the other woman, too. I mean, they had more sex and more fun and had more joie de vivre than patients that I was treating and friends that I had who were in their 30s and 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
And I remember after Charlotte died, I remember saying to myself, I want to be her. I want to be her when I'm 90 years old. See,
well,
Jim,
so
I want to be her. I want to be having sex at 90. I want to be feeling terrific. I want to be dressing up just like, you know, we try to do now. So much of this, and these, both of these women, they also had some, you know, physical illnesses and challenges.
Right.
But somehow they were able to muster up an energy and a life within themselves that they were able to express not only to themselves but to the world.
Absolutely, and you know that's a big theme in my novel as well, because the women in this book are in their 50s up through their 90s, which, by the way, there aren't too many novels where the female characters are in those ages, which is another thing.
Uh-huh.
But they're all vibrant women who are fully living their lives. And I call it the power of saying yes, because we all know women in their 30s who are old.
Yes, right.
Now we all know women in their 80s and into their 90s who are young. So what is it that makes that happen? And I think it's because everybody says learn how to say no, and yes, there's a certain point in your life where you say yes and blah, 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 and overextend yourself. But I think you get to a point in life where you have to say yes to living, yes to life, yes, I'm going to just go and do this, yes, I'm going to try this. And I think when you look at the kind of women that you just described, that's what they're doing. They're living their lives as fully as they can at every stage. I know this wonderful woman in New York City who's in her 80s, wonderful, vibrant, and she has said to me, you know, there are so many evenings when I would be perfectly content curled up with a book, watching something on Netflix, and then someone will call me, a friend will call and say, do you want to go out and do this, or this, and she said, you know what? I always just get myself up, get dressed, made up, and I go.
That's terrific.
And I think that's the difference in the attitude.
Well, and look at what you've been able to do as a founder and publisher of Three Tomatoes. And for listeners who do not know what Three Tomatoes is, you can tell us a little bit about this tremendously. Ah, I mean, it's a fabulous website for women of a certain age.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. Yeah, it's a lifestyle website and newsletters that really cover the gamut of everything we're all interested, from style to fashion to health to sexual health and relationships and travel and, you know, all the things that we're all interested in. And then we also have three city-specific issues on what's going on in New York City, Los Angeles, and San Francisco as well. So it's really through the Three Tomatoes that I've really had the chance to meet so many amazing women at all ages who I have been so inspired by, and that's what inspires me, and that's really what, you know, really what inspired the novel, to say, hey, there's a lot left in us, and why are we cheering about it?
But do you find, though, that with the women that we know, that do you find that the women are starting to cheer more about their age and stage in life? And if they're not cheering, then they need to see somebody like me to help them work through some of the blocks that they may be dealing with, or really not dealing with, that would help them to then move forward and live a life of joy and zest.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there are women struggling with that and kind of seeing things as endings and not as an opportunity for beginnings. And I know you know this, Beattie, because you're one of these people. I think one of the great joys about getting older is we actually get much more creative. And I just see women in our friends of mine in their 60s and 70s and even into their 80s who are starting to do things they never did before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like me, I wrote a book.
Right.
I never did that before.
Right.
And I'm seeing other people and friends who are saying, you know what, now is the time for me to just try and do that.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the women that I think can kind of help to cheer other women on. But the other thing I see that I think is really so great, and I know you see this in New York, Beattie, because you're part of this wonderful group of friends and a huge network that we all share in New York, is we all support each other.
Yes.
And that is so important. And we are there for each other. and we encourage each other. We applaud each other's achievements. So I think so many of the things that when we're younger, whether it was, you know, feeling envious or, you know, not quite as good as this one, so I think a lot of that stuff goes away when you look around and you start to share and celebrate your friends.
And I think, too, I mean, you've really, really helped to develop and establish an incredible network. I mean, I know myself when I came to New York, I didn't know anybody. And thanks to our mutual friend Ann Akers and to you and to your incredible network, I mean, I found a place. I mean, literally, I knew no one other than Jim. And it could have been extraordinarily lonely, and having the support and the love from all of the women has made an incredible difference in my life, and I know it makes a huge difference in all of our lives. I mean, I look on, yeah, on Facebook, and people are so supportive. I mean, I've never known women to be so supportive of one another. And I think that that probably in part has a great deal to do with you. I think that I do, Cheryl, and I'm not just saying this, you know, because we're on the radio right now. I think that, you know, part of the message, consciously or unconsciously, that you communicate to people is that we need to help each other. We need to be there for each other. We need to support each other. And all of the women who are a part of this network, I mean, that is exactly what they do. And you've been a tremendous leader in making this happen.
I appreciate that.
It's true. It's absolutely true.
Wonderful women involved. And I think sometimes that surprises people because they tend to think of New York City as this place that, oh, that would be the last place where that would happen. And yet, you know, you're part of this network of amazing women who are doing this and are, you know, embracing and encouraging and supportive of one another. So we need more of that to happen everywhere.
We actually definitely do. So listen, where can people purchase Can You See Us Now?
Yeah, thank you. They can go to Amazon, Can You See Us Now. You can buy either the hard copy or the Kindle version, and very shortly it will be on online booksellers everywhere. So it's a fun read, I think.
I agree. I agree.
A few people.
No, and I know. I certainly recommend that everybody go to Amazon ASAP,
yeah,
and purchase the book. Listen, Cheryl, it was wonderful, wonderful speaking with you, and I hope to see you soon. And good luck. Good luck with this, and congratulations, and I'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, that was Cheryl Benton, who is the founder and publisher of the Three Tomatoes website, and it really is an amazing website for women who aren't kids. It has helped me very much navigate my new life here in New York City. And her book, Can You See Us Now? Can You See Us Now? Can be purchased on Amazon. And for those of you who are actually curious about what this book is about, I'll read you a little synopsis here. Susie, Trish, and Madge, best friends since their early 20s, seemed to have it all. Beautiful, smart, and successful, they'd made it to the top in the most demanding city of them all, New York City. Then they turned 50 and found that the world, which was once was their oyster, started closing up faster than a New York minute. Bartenders ignore them, bosses marginalize them, and they've aged out of the prized 25 to 49-year-old demographic that marketers woo. They had suddenly become invisible. And of course, you know, I ask you whether or not you are feeling invisible, whether or not you are experiencing depression or anxiety or substance abuse issues or relationship issues or sexual issues. The real question then becomes, what are you going to do about this? And for those women who are in New York City, you should really go to your computers and Google the Three Tomatoes website. Cheryl Benton has done an incredible job. She lets us know everything possible that is going on in New York, activities and restaurants and cultural activities. And if you are alone and if you're feeling, you know, blue and lonely and wondering, you know, how can I connect with women over 50, I highly, highly recommend going to the Three Tomatoes website. All right, everybody, moving along. I have much more to say today about painful sex. And there was a piece in the New York Times and also in the Huffington Post. Painful sex is often the first sign of a serious condition for women, but most doctors dismiss it, and you will hear very, very frequently, "It is all in your head," is a common refrain, and I think that a lot of doctors miss the boat. And here is an article, and I wanted to read you just a couple of things from this particular article. Okay. The first time Mary H. realized something was wrong with her body was the first time she had sex. She was 22, living in New Jersey, and with the high school boyfriend she'd been dating since she was 16 years old. During their first intercourse, she felt a sharp pain at the entrance of her vagina that was so intense that they didn't complete the act. I mean, that's not unusual, okay, for the first time that people are having sex. She continued to feel the pain during subsequent attempts. Okay, so that needs to be or needed to be a red flag. Over the years, she tried to bring up the pain with different health care providers, but was rebuffed. And I think a lot of doctors are very uncomfortable talking about sex themselves. So they do whatever they can do to avoid the issue, whether or not they're doing it on a conscious level, on an unconscious level. I hear this all the time. So what did these doctors advise Mary to do? Well, they advised her to drink some wine and relax and watch movies. And one clinic suggested her boyfriend may be coercing her into having rough sex, which, by the way, he was not. Another clinician said it could have something to do with her mood, with her depression. But the fact was, and that was not true either, I think she was getting really depressed because she did not know and was not able to find out why she was experiencing pain with sex. In fact, the pain was so bad that on the rare occasion that she and her now husband would have sex, Mary would end up crying in the shower afterwards. After every climax, she said that cramping was so intense that it felt as if someone had moved her organs around inside her body. You know, right now I have a patient who is having some serious, serious urological issues. She has been to five of the top urologists here in New York City without any success at all. And a couple of weeks ago, I said to her, I said, listen, we really need to find somebody who's going to be able to give you yet a sixth opinion, because with all of these doctors and all these opinions, the problems are persisting. So what is the moral of this story is that sometimes, fortunately or unfortunately, the reality is that we have to visit many, many different clinicians, and that is including therapists as well, before we are able to get the actual help that we need. So Mary, what was she feeling? She says she felt like she was a bad wife. I felt like I wasn't a woman. What was I doing wrong? So women like Mary, who experience chronic debilitating pain during sex. And maybe some of you who are listening right now are also experiencing debilitating pain during sex. There can be few places, believe it or not, to turn to for help. If doctors learn about female sexual symptoms at all during medical school or residency, they are advised to prescribe ways to relax patients, like drinking alcohol. But sexual dysfunction symptoms are far more common among people, and listen to this, with chronic ailments like diabetes, psoriasis, depression, or even cardiovascular disease, and they can also be one of the first signs that something may be seriously wrong with a woman's reproductive organs. And when a doctor dismisses a woman's concern about sexual dysfunction, he or she could miss an opportunity to diagnose diseases. And this is not something in your head, where sexual dysfunction may be their first or only symptom. And that is what getting to the root of the problem is all about, whether or not you're talking about sexual dysfunction, whether or not you're talking about depression, anxiety, sexual problems, relationships problems. It is all about figuring out what is this all about. And the definition of female sexual dysfunction, it is slippery. It is slippery because it depends on an individual woman's own perspective on her symptoms. Okay, for instance, female sexual dysfunction is an umbrella term that covers symptoms like pain during sex, low libido, and difficulty with arousal or orgasm. But if a woman experiences these things and is not distressed about them, or if she is satisfied with the quality of her sex life, then she doesn't have female sexual dysfunction. In fact, I was a guest speaker at Cheryl Benton's, my guest today, at a conference that she had at a Three Tomatoes conference last year. And I was talking about sex. And there was a question from the audience, and I thought it was a really, really, really good question. The question was, what if I don't want to have sex? And what if my partner doesn't want to have sex? Is there something wrong with us? Do we have a sexual problem? And what do you think my response was? If you have two people in a relationship who are perfectly happy without having a sexual relationship, then there is not a problem. The problem occurs, of course, if one person wants to have a sexual relationship and the other person does not. So living in a sexless marriage, as long as two people agree, in my opinion, is not an issue. So women can also experience seasons of female sexual dysfunction that come and go depending on other factors in her life, like postpartum recovery, serious illness, or the beginning of menopause. And here's something interesting. One nationally representative survey from 1999 estimates that 43% of American women ages 18 to 59 experience sexual dysfunction on the basis that they said they had experienced for a period of several months or more a lack of interest in sex, inability to have an orgasm, pain during sex, lack of pleasure during sex, anxiety before sex, or an inability to self-lubricate in the past 12 months. But this number does not reveal whether any of these symptoms caused women distress or whether some of these issues could be related to the women's sex partner. A Dr. Lori Stryker, who is the founder of the Center for Sexual Medicine and Menopause at the Northwestern Memorial Hospital, said that she is often And this is exactly what I was saying, and this has been my experience as well, that she is often the fourth or fifth doctor a woman has seen for a sexual health symptom. And while the causes of sexual dysfunction can be complex, they can also be symptoms of screenable diseases like thyroid problems, endometriosis, or ovarian cancer, all things that can cause, okay? All things that can cause lack of libido or pain during sex and shouldn't require multiple doctor's visits. And Dr. Stryker recalled a recent patient, a young woman whose problems were so severe that she hadn't been able to consummate her new marriage. She visited 14 other doctors about the pain she experienced during intercourse and was being pushed toward talk therapy as a solution. But listen to this. Once Dr. Stryker performed a simple physical examination, not a complex physical examination, but a simple physical examination, what did she find? Well, she discovered an obvious explanation for the woman's problems, and this was a vaginal septum, a rare condition in which a wall of flesh divides the vagina into two chambers. Every time this woman had tried to have sex, her partner's penis was crashing into the septum, causing her intense pain. Now, fortunately, Dr. Stryker was able to fix the problem with a simple surgery, but said that she still referred the patient for talk therapy because the length of time it had taken to get the correct diagnosis had strained her relationship with her husband. So like Dr. Stryker's patient, some women may have a singular medical cause for their sexual symptoms. However, it is most likely that a complex mix of factors, both psychological and physical, could be contributing to sexual dysfunction. And additionally, one sexual concern could obviously snowball into several other problems. So, like my patient who's been visiting one urologist after another and who has not been able to find any remedy for her very uncomfortable and painful urological issues, and she fortunately is continuing. She has the wherewithal and the will to continue, and I'd like to think with my support to try to get to the root of the problem. So if any of you who are listening right now, if you are experiencing painful sex, you could certainly give me a call because I actually have a couple of doctors here in New York City who I would highly, highly recommend, who would help you to be able to get to the root of the problem. But let me say something else, okay? Let's assume that there are no physical problems and that you've had a very, very thorough urological, gynecological examination, and yet there are still issues, that you are still experiencing painful sex or low libido. So there are a number of things that I want you to consider, okay? And that's number one. If you're feeling depressed or anxious, or if perhaps you were molested as a child or have experienced early child sexual abuse or sexual assault, this may be a factor in why you are uncomfortable or why you are experiencing painful sex, okay? It's something that you need to rule out. It's something that you need to consider. Number two, if your relationship if your relationship is not in a good place, if you are angry with your partner, if you don't like your partner, if you have issues with your partner that have not been resolved, if you are disappointed, if you are not attracted to your partner, all of these things do and can contribute to your not wanting to have sex and also to your experiencing pain when you have sex. Now, this is assuming, of course, that we have completely ruled out everything and anything that could be potentially physical. All right. Number three, I want you to look very, very carefully at all of the medications that you are taking, over-the-counter medications, prescription medications, many, many medications, including antidepressants, have serious sexual side effects, both for men and for women. And this is something that you need to discuss with your pharmacist. Now, these days we can go online and we can read about sexual side effects. We can read about just about anything online. And you want to make sure that if your medication is interfering with your sex life, with sexual desire, with sexual dysfunction, that you do your research and then you need to go to your doctor and say, listen, doctor, is there a different family of drug? Is there a lower dose of the medicine that I actually do need to be taking that would help to alleviate sexual side effects? So we have to be our own sleuth. We have to do our own research, beginning with our own emotional, mental, and psychiatric state, looking at our own relationships. If you're furious with your partner, you're not going to want to have your partner touch you. If you are taking all of these pills, over-the-counter pills and prescription medications, many, many of them have sexual side effects. These are conversations that you need to have with your doctor. And of course, making sure that any illness, any physical, medical illness or problem is sufficiently ruled out. And then you have to look at things like menopause. You have to look at things like hormones. You know, for example, for women, for menopausal women, we have to look at our hormone levels and take a look at our estrogen levels, our progesterone levels, our testosterone levels, and sometimes a small addition of hormones to our body. And this is an individual thing. There are pros and cons for women to be taking hormones of any kind. This is a conversation that you need to have with your doctor that can make all the difference in the world, okay? So you're going down a laundry list of things that you actually do need to check out. And then let's talk about being attractive to and being attracted to your partner. What do you need? What do you actually need when it comes to turning yourself on? Does your partner know what turns you on? Do you know what actually turns your partner on? And you may be surprised, of course, again, in my experience, you know, wearing my sex therapy hat, that the majority of people do not talk about. They do not talk about what they like, how they like to be touched, how much foreplay. And we, you know, thinking now, you know, about women. How much foreplay do you want? How much foreplay do you need? How much foreplay do you communicate to your partner that you want and need so that you are in a place where you are feeling very, very aroused, very turned on, and are ready to have intercourse? I think that we still are very, very shy to discuss this kind of thing with our partner. And our partners, we are not mind readers. We are not mind readers. And this also goes for men, for older men. They're not going to be able to just look at your face or look at your body most of the time for men over 70 and 80 and automatically being able to get erection. So men also need sufficient foreplay. And we need to talk about it with our partners, specifically what it is that we like, what it is that we don't like, so that we are both able to really, really enjoy our sexual relationship together. And by the way, for women, and I can speak, of course, as a woman, assuming that the relationship is in a good place, you know, the majority of women need between 15 and 20 minutes of foreplay, physical foreplay, not just telling you how beautiful you are and how much I love you before women are able to get to a high level arousal. So there are a lot of things that we need to know. There are a lot of things that we need to research. And there are also a lot of things that we need to communicate to our partners, like the couple who came to see me from California who had not had sex in 9.5 years out of their 10-year marriage. You know, she's a doctor, he's a technology expert, and yet, despite the fact that they're educated and lovely, they did not know how to begin to talk about sex. They did not know how to begin to discuss the fact that he had a long-term erectile dysfunction issue. And had they not come to New York last weekend, the couple definitely would have been divorced. She was not prepared any longer to live in a sexless marriage. So what was interesting in this particular case is that she went out and she had an affair. Rather than saying to her husband, listen, honey, I love you. We have a lot of wonderful, wonderful things going on in our marriage, but we have some issues. It was not just his issue. It was obviously a couple issues. And together, we need to take care of business. We need to really be serious about acknowledging, addressing, and resolving our sexual problem. So fortunately, the problem, at least for one weekend, was resolved. We know that he's able to achieve and maintain erections. And I'm going to actually be following up with this couple because, you know, yes, it was great after, you know, a weekend that things were, you know, looking to be on track. But clearly some ongoing follow up is going to be necessary. So it is another week, another hour here on the Ask Beattie Show. I want to thank you all so much for listening, and I'm hoping that there is something that I said today that will inspire and motivate you to take care of your business. And I leave you with two thoughts. I want you to love yourselves, and I want you to love each other, and have a great day. And I will speak with you next Monday and every Monday here on the Ask Beattie Show, right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Take care of yourselves, everyone. Bye-bye. Oceans and rivers, enough to cross, enough to last, till the end of time.